Genesis chapter 12. And it's very important for us to see that. So Galatians chapter 3, verses 7 through 9, Paul writes, "Know then that it is those of faith who are the sons of Abraham. And the Scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, 'In you shall all the nations be blessed.' So then, those who are of faith are blessed along with Abraham, the man of faith." I mean, this is a vital passage here in Galatians. I mean, Paul makes it so abundantly clear the purpose and the meaning of this prophecy back in Genesis chapter 12. Because there are some people today that might try and say, and because I've heard it, "Oh, well, that's not really what that's talking about. That's more generic, or that's more specific than that, and it doesn't really apply." And all it's like, no. Paul makes it very clear the promise to Abraham in Genesis 12 is talking about salvation to everyone through Christ. And how are we as Gentiles able to be in Abraham? How is that possible? Obedient faith. That's what he says here. Those of faith are sons of Abraham. That's how we are in him. That's how we are of his spiritual lineage. Okay? And this even, and it's amazing here that he even calls this the gospel. He calls this message, this prophecy in Genesis chapter 12, Paul says that this was the gospel being preached to Abraham all the way back in Genesis chapter 12. And what's the gospel? The gospel is the good news of Jesus Christ. This is being preached all the way back in Genesis chapter 12, and I find that amazing. Okay, Vern. The whole thing is bringing you to Christ. The whole thing is pointing to Jesus. The entire Old Testament, especially starting here in Genesis chapter 12. But again, as I've been trying to stress throughout this study, chapters 1 through 11, the whole point of that is to bring us to this family through which Christ would come. And so it's sort of like I see it as he's kind of whittling it down. You know, it starts, okay, here's the history of the world, and it comes down, you know, until here, now we've gotten to Abraham, now we've gotten to this family through whom the Messiah would come. Okay, Dave?
Jesse, I struggled for years, especially in early years, reading the New Testament, hearing about Israel, but then I learned that we are Israel today. We are the chosen people.
Yeah, we are spiritual Israel, and spiritual Israel is those that, like Abraham, were justified by faith. And that's exactly what he says there. And we see that the first example of someone being justified by faith is here with Abraham. And so just very important, and of course that's also what Paul is going to discuss at length in the book of Romans, chapter 4 especially, about Abraham being the example of someone who is justified by faith. And so that's how we are also justified by faith, trying to tell them that, look, the law is not the thing that's going to do it for you. The way that God justifies people predates the law. And the law was simply a guardian to bring us to Christ. And so all of that is wrapped up together, and it goes all the way back here to Genesis chapter 12. That's why I say this is just such an important chapter for us to know in our minds, to see what these promises are, what they entail, and how this is, in Paul's own words, the first preaching of the gospel, that in him all the nations of the earth would be blessed. Okay. One other thing I want us to note here is, as some of you mentioned, the fact that in verse 3 he says to Abraham, I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And so it's not just that in him all the families of the earth would be blessed, but there's also this attendant, okay, those that deal well with you, they are going to be blessed, and those who dishonor you are going to be cursed. Well, what does that mean? How does that apply? Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the conquest of Canaan plays in here. Yeah, and that's one thing that I do find interesting about the latter part of this chapter is Pharaoh's words and his treatment once of Abraham once he finds out that he has his wife in his household, and he says, "What in the world have you done to me? You know, take her back." And he knows that this is immoral, that this is a wrong thing. You know, he makes it right immediately as soon as he realizes what the problem is. He certainly, you know, how he had that sort of moral awareness, you know, it doesn't say, but certainly there seems to have been some knowledge of God there, I think, and the moral necessities of dealing rightly.
One little thing is we have 12 chapters here that we talk about pre-Abraham, showing how important the book of Genesis is to Abraham. The rest of it, three-fourths of the book,
yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, you've covered like a couple thousand years, you know, of history, and then the rest of the book is whittling down to just a couple hundred, 200-300 years, you know, of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and his sons, you know, and then that's, I mean, you go from however many, I didn't count however many generations, but lots and lots of generations until the last 12 through 50 of the book is just these four or five generations. So, yeah, really, again, like I said, it's just whittling it down until, okay, now we've gotten to this family, and this is the important story of how the you know, again, who is Moses' audience here in Genesis? Who is he originally writing this to? Likely, I mean, the people of Israel, as they're about to, you know, in the wilderness, about to go into Canaan. I mean, he's trying to tell them about their history and about the God that they serve, and trying to teach them about his nature and the problem of sin, and how all of this is coming together because of this one family. Yeah?
So Jesse, in thought of the conquering of other nations, this whole, it's a great thought for us today to apply our faith to know we're in a wicked and moral society.
Yeah, and of course Abraham there was not alone. I mean, he was living amongst a lot of people that weren't faithful, and yet we see his faith in the midst of that. And so that's certainly applicable to us here today. And that really leads us into, we talk about Abraham being justified by faith. Well, what are some examples of faith that we see here? Why was it so hard for Abraham to believe that he was going to be given a land? Well, he didn't even know where he was going. How was it so hard for him to believe that he was going to have a great name and a great nation? I mean, his wife was barren. How is it so hard for him to believe that through him all the families of the earth should be blessed? Yeah, I mean, but why? How did he have the faith to believe that? And what?
God was speaking to him.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
how would you not believe that?
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but just the fact that he didn't really... He still believed God despite not really, I think, having the full understanding of even what it meant. He didn't have an understanding of the sheer scope of what this was going to encompass. And this was something that had never happened before. I mean, he couldn't see, you know... We understand that they didn't really even... A lot of the prophets didn't even understand the things that they were prophesying about. And yet, they believed it anyway. And he still got up and he went. And he still believed that he would have a child. Now, he took matters into his own hands, as we're going to see in chapter 16. But it took tremendous faith on the part of Abraham. And again, that's why he was justified in the eyes of God. Yeah?
I think today we just question...
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
that certainly would have been advantageous to be able to have that conversation with God. Jake?
I was going to say, in Genesis chapter 22:18, it says, "And your seed, all the nations of the earth, shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice."
Yeah.
So total obedience to the Lord has always been incredible until this day.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's not just faith, it's an obedient faith, and we see that in his actions. Okay, so the next part of this chapter talks about Abraham's journey from Haran. And so he's 75, as we said, when he departs from there. He takes Sarai, his wife, Lot, his nephew, and all of their people and possessions that they had acquired in Haran. So where's the first place that he comes to? Anybody know? And he stops. Shechem. Okay, he comes to Shechem and he settles there. And the Lord again appears to him saying, okay, this is the land that I'm going to give you. Verse 7, to your offspring I will give this land. So, what does he do? He builds an altar. He sacrifices. He worships the Lord. And we see also, just as a little side note, Shechem was an important settlement, a major settlement there that begins around 1900 B.C. And it is... There's some other texts that confirm that, some ancient Egyptian texts and so forth that talk about Shechem. And it seems that Abraham then settles out as a shepherd. You know, he needed to be out. He wasn't living in the city, like he's living near there so that his flocks and so forth could graze. And so, and then it notes again, at that time the Canaanites were in the land. So just kind of give us an idea of where he is. And it's a very important city at that time, Shechem. All right, so after that, he moves where? From Shechem to verse 8. Yeah, he moves to the east of Bethel with Ai on the east and Bethel on the west. He builds yet another altar to the Lord there and calls upon the name of the Lord in verse 8. And then in verse 9, it says that he journeys on towards the Negev. And does anybody know what Negev is? Okay, and the word literally means south. So he's basically, again, we just see how he's journeying from the north in Haran. He's coming down through the land of Canaan and southward towards Egypt. And so he's kind of moving down that way. And then when he's in Shechem, that's when God says, hey, this is the land that I'm going to give you. Okay, and then what happens after that? All right, there's a famine in the land, verse 10, and that forces them to go where? Egypt. And what happens upon their entrance into Egypt? Yeah. he says, okay, Sarah, you're very beautiful and they're going to notice you. And so when we get there, say what? You're my sister, which was a half-truth. She was his half-sister, but she was his wife. And so what happens? What's the result? All right, so yeah, Pharaoh takes her into his house. They praised her to Pharaoh, and she was taken into his house. And he dealt well with Abraham because of her, and he had sheep, oxen, donkeys, servants, and camels. And the Lord, but then what happens in verse 17? The Lord afflicted Pharaoh in his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And then, of course, after that, then Pharaoh does what? What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife and said she was my sister? Here is your wife, take her and go. And he gave orders and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. Okay, so what sin occurs here with Abram? Or sin. Number one, he lies. But number two, what do we see? Yeah, a surprising lack of faith. And here we talk about the man of faith who is justified by faith, and yet he had moments of weakness in his faith. And that just should show us that, look, it's okay. God understands our human weaknesses, and he bears with that. And that we can still be justified by our faith despite our moments of weakness. Jake?
I was going to say that in the text here, he says that, please tell them you're my sister, because they're going to kill me.
Yeah.
It's literally a lack of empathy.
Yeah.
Just like we have today, modern days, that these guys are going to literally kill me over this.
Yeah.
So it's that guy, I don't know, I'm not going to say it's justified, but he was scared for his own life. He said, you were going to save me if you do this.
Yeah, but at the same time, he should have been trusting in God.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I'm just that scary, thinking about your life going to be taken because of this lady.
Yeah, they're going to kill you so they can have your wife. Yeah. 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 Look what happened. Here he gets this whole situation. With a very powerful man who I would have been more afraid would have killed me when he found out that I had lied to him. But in any case, Sam.
How was it that Pharaoh came to the conclusion that it was Abraham that was the ultimate source of his problem?
The plagues had to have had something to do with it. Who knows? God could have spoken directly to the details there, but he had a pretty clear indication somehow or another that the reason for the plagues was because of Sarai.
Yeah, I was convinced it wasn't his God did it.
Yeah. yeah, Judy.
Okay, so Pharaoh took her as his wife, so does that mean she was married to him in the sense that...
I don't know. Customs back then, she was taken into his house. There probably would have been a period, and of course he probably had lots of women. Whether that would have been consummated immediately or not, I don't know. There could have been a period of time where she was in his house and he never touched her. We just don't know. So, sorry, I can't answer that question any better than that. But in any case, he says in verse 18, verse 19, he took her, that I took her for my wife. That was obviously his intention, at least. Okay?
I think maybe this is one of the reasons why when God asked Abraham to offer up Isaac, he didn't question how that would affect him having all nations trust in him.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think he certainly came to a greater reliance upon God and trust in God as a result of experience in Egypt. Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts on that? All right. So before we move on from this story, I want to discuss some of the parallels that we see here between Abraham and Israel. And there's a table on page 32 in your workbook that kind of makes this a little bit easier for us. But what are some of the things that we see, some of the similarities we see between the experience of Abram and the experience of Israel? All right, number one, they go down into where? Egypt, because of famine. All right, so we see that this entire experience that Abram has is essentially a prophecy. It's a foreshadowing of what's going to happen with the great nation that comes from him. So then, Abram prospers in Egypt. So does Israel. They become great. That is, in fact, where they become a great nation, is while they are sojourning in Egypt. And then Abraham's situation changes when Pharaoh discovers that Sarai is his wife. Israel's situation changes when a new Pharaoh puts them in bondage. And then God plagues Pharaoh's house. Again, God sends the plagues to force Pharaoh to release the people from Egypt. And then they are driven out. And when they come out of Egypt, both times they come out very, very rich. And of course, for Abraham, he already had a lot of possessions going in, but the implication here is that it was just even wildly abundantly, even more than that going out. But of course, Israel, they went, whenever they were there, did they have a lot while they were in Egypt? I mean, at least whatever they had was probably mostly taken away because they were slave laborers. So how then do they end up being rich on their way out?
The Egyptians gave them reasons to leave. Here, take our gold, take all this.
Yeah, I mean, they essentially plundered the Egyptians on their way out. And so they came out of Egypt with a great amount of possessions. And so we see all those parallels there as not an accident. Not an accident that we see so many similarities between the story of Abram and the story of the people of Israel later on, several hundred years later. Okay. Moving on into chapter 13. Yeah, Mike.
And I don't have a workbook, so maybe it's there, but it's something that I've been thinking on this morning is the connection with what God is offering Abraham early on. We talked about the blessing of the name and a great nation and land and so on and so forth. And this side of the cross, the quick denial that we can find ourselves in seemingly doing things faithful and right, can resemble exactly the same thing. We can find ourselves with a good day. We can find ourselves with maybe a little bit of wealth that we call blessings. We can find ourselves with a little bit of land, which we think we're entitled to. All of these things are fine. They're A-okay. A faithful follower, I think, will end up with those things. But it's interesting that Pharaoh was able to basically, very quickly, because of a lie, offered him everything. You're going to have a great day in here. Look around. People are going to respect you. Mm-hmm. You're going to have plenty. God's going to offer plenty. So very quickly we forget and offer this land of denial between our ears, thinking that, okay, I'm in the right spot.
Yeah, but I mean, we certainly see here that God always provides for his people. We see that with Abram, we see that with Israel, and we should see that in ourselves. That if we are faithfully following, he is going to provide. Now, whether that is, you know, the most simplistic and basic necessities, or if it's an abundance, who knows how our life's going to go. But he is going to provide those who are his followers, as Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, do not have to worry about where they're going to eat, where they're going to sleep, what they're going to wear. David?
Brother Jesse, my thoughts were in line with Mike a lot with what was said about them leaving Egypt very well. Sadly, you know, in terms of television on today, I've heard several lessons very well if you follow me. Thank you. But not God necessarily, but follow me last thing. Tell me this is what I'm doing. And I would apply that directly to our lives today. You know that's a basic life. Paul said he was a base in the family. You know, he knew how to base, he knew how to control. And either way, we're following God. It's not always going to be the family.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the health and wealth gospel is is a lie. Sam?
Well, I get the sense, first of all, that Abraham was not ill-equipped to make lots of money and accumulate gold and silver. I think he did some really good business with the Egyptians. And I think God also, at the time of the Exodus from Egypt, made sure that his children would have what they would need in order to go into and establish themselves in the promised land. And we see in between. And always, God made a great promise, or a series of great promises. The greater the promises, the greater the blessings that were necessary to support those promises. And that's why all of us are talking about Abraham being blessed.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, Jason, you had your hand up.
Yeah, lot of the stuff's been covered, but I was going to say, as far as the apostles go, when the Lord sent them out, he told them, don't worry about taking money, clothes, you know. If you come to somebody's house and they're worthy, you bless them. You know, you hear they were blessing. If they're not, you know, you dust your shoes off or your feet on them, you know. And we see that Paul said that, you know, the apostles are, they're poorly clothed. They're hungry at times. They're starving. You know, they're beaten. You know, they're going to come in the world and they're fools for Christ's sake. You know, and but no matter what, if they're doing good or whether they're doing bad, they're always obedient to the Lord no matter what.
Yeah.
If they're singing in prison, if you have to.
Praising
the Lord at 12 o'clock in the afternoon with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you guys lost your mind? You just got good for this. Praise the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing example. David?
There can be a curse along with what the preacher called. And I wrote this text that I don't have with me on travel. One of the impressed myself, and he probably heard it in kind of four different ways. And that is opportunity plus ability and responsibility. So I just don't want to be that responsible, I'll be honest. But I don't want that kind of responsibility. And the desert does teach us that it's hard to go there with those kind of obligations.
Yeah.
I think it's important for us to remember, especially I remember as a young person, there being several prominent co-evangelists who were promising the world, especially wealth, if you just fall out to the tribute. God said to his son that the kingdom was not going to be in this world. That's one of the reasons why God's former chosen refused to accept Jesus as the Messiah, because they had always been used to it being as much an earthly kingdom as it was a spiritual kingdom. And they just rejected that that would change.
Okay, so moving on into chapter 13, just quickly here, we have the story of Abram and Lot separating after they leave Egypt. Of course, we know they both leave Egypt very rich. And so they have so many possessions that what happens? Yeah, not enough room for them to dwell, you know, their flocks, their people all in the same place. And I did just want to note out one quick thing that our author says in the book that I thought was good. He says that Abram survived in Egypt because of God's care for him instead of his manipulations and deceit. I thought that was good. You know, yes, Abram did some things as kind of self-preservation, what he thought he had to do, but in fact, really, he should have been relying on God, and it was God that got him through that. Okay, so their possessions are so great, they cannot dwell together. So what do they do? What does Abraham say to Lot? All right, look, you know, takes them up on a hill. All right, look every which way, decide which way you want to go. Whichever way you go, I'll go the opposite. And, of course, what does Lot do? He says, hey, there's the well-watered valley over there. It's nice and lush and green. I'm going to take my stuff and go that way. And Abraham says, okay. And Abraham goes the opposite way. And so what do we see here in Abraham in that decision? We see his faith, you know, we see that he's a man of his word, you know, he's not jealous, he's not going to go back on what he told Lot, even though Lot made the selfish decision, because, again, we see him progressing here in his faith in God. And, of course, I think it's also important to note that he thought it was so important that he had peace within his family and unity among brethren. So I think that's another important thing for us to note here. Look, let's not have strife between us. We are brothers. And so that, of course, also applies to us today. And so Lot chooses this well-watered Jordan Valley to the east. And what does it say that was, I think, forebodingly says it was near what cities? Sodom and Gomorrah. And it says that they were great sinners very wicked people. Notes that here again in this instance. And we're going to see that several times, that the Sodom and Gomorrah is talked about several times before its destruction. And so Abraham settles to the west in the land of Canaan. All right, the last part here that I want to notice is that God renews his promise with Abram in the last part of chapter 13. He says in verse 14, Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, north, south, east, and west, for all the land that you see I will give to you and to your offspring forever. So now, the first time he told him, okay, go to this land that you don't know, and then so he gets up and goes, and then he tells him, this is the land I'm going to give you, and then he leaves, and then he comes back, and once again God tells him, okay, now from here, look all around, every direction, as far as you can see, this is the land that you're going to have, not only you, but your offspring, and not just for some limited period of time, but he says, forever. And I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth. So talking about how great, how numerous they're going to be. So that if one can count the dust, your offspring also can be counted. All arise and walk the length and breadth of the land, for I will give it to you. So Abram moved his tent and came and settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron. And there he built an altar to the Lord. So again, we see every time that he settles somewhere and sort of meets with God, every time he builds an altar and he worships and he sacrifices to the Lord there at that place. And so we see here, as God renews the promise to Abraham, that he shows him the land, he tells him about the numerous nature of his offspring. They'll be as the dust of the earth. The land is guaranteed to them forever. And he settles here at Hebron. Okay, so that gets us through chapter 13. And next week we will get into chapter